If you like to eat, drink, and be merry, you're in the right place. Faith here with a welcome toast. It was Elsa Lancaster who said she looked as though butter wouldn't melt in her mouth or anywhere else. Please feel free to consume this show podcast in small bites or eat the whole thing. The following encore presentation of the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze is a favorite from our archives. Hope you enjoy. I'm Faith Middleton. It's great to have you joining the party on the Food Schmooze here on WNPR in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. My food buddies are here. Christopher Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut. Regular contributor Alex Province of Hartford, Connecticut. Producers Lori Mack and Jonathan McNichol. Hey, everybody.
Hey.
And we always tell you this. Tell your friends, no matter where they live, that they can listen to the Food Schmooze from anywhere in the world, as many people do at WNPR.org. I wanted to let you know that there is this very, very quirky quarterly food journal called Lucky Peach. In the middle of it, I find a recipe from a mountain climber and a camper, and he carries everything in, of course, so he's relying on lightweight ingredients. But he obviously is somebody who cares about food. So he says he's very proud of his beef à l'orange. So here's his description of the recipe. It's printed right here in the journal. Step one, brown chipped beef in vegetable oil. Step two, add a spoonful of flour and toast for 1 minute. Step three, stir in two soy sauce packets and one ketchup packet. Step four, stir in 1 cup prepared Tang orange drink. Wow. Step five, simmer for 8 to 10 minutes until beef is swelled and sauce thickened. Step six, serve with instant rice.
That's awesome.
That's thinking on your feet.
Is this fun?
That's like a sweet and salty beef dish.
All right, it's fascinating to me, this world of people who have to travel. Whether you're in space, whether you're a soldier in the field, a camper like this guy.
Survivalists.
Where you're just, I mean, some people would say, you know, I'm a working mom and dad and, you know, we have to put together food as fast as we can. But the ingredients
chipped
that
beef.
People will. So where?
I want chipped beef.
Where is
chipped beef? What is chipped beef?
Where is it?
Is it dried?
Where do you find chipped beef?
In the frozen food section?
Is it dried?
No,
or frozen?
I think I've seen it like in Stop and Shop, like on a high.
Is it a can?
I thought it was like in some package. It's not refrigerated.
Oh, it's dry.
I thought chipped beef was
freeze dried.
So it's freeze dried. I thought it was in a jar, but it's so.
I think a jar. I think you're right. I think it's in a jar.
It's so utterly preserved.
I love when he said swelled.
I think this is the first time.
Where's your bell? This is the first time I think I've ever heard you say cook until swelled.
It needs to be called beef a la tongue.
And what was the other ingredient? Tang? What was the last time you saw Tang?
It was Tang.
What is Tang?
Seriously? You don't know?
Okay, I mean, I remember they took it to space.
So I think with some reverence, we should list the ingredients that are in Tang. Okay, Jonathan?
It's sugar and citric acid, and then less than 2% of natural and artificial flavor, ascorbic acid, maltodextrin, calcium phosphate.
Oh, that's one of my favorites.
Guar and xanthan gums, sodium acid, pyrophosphate. Ooh. Artificial colors, yellow 5 and yellow 6, and BHA.
Nice. Okay. Hey, good enough for our astronauts.
It's good enough for me. I certainly had it as a kid. Do you remember having it?
I definitely did.
I like eating the powder.
Yeah,
like
I did too.
Dip your finger in.
Right.
Nice.
Burns the enamel off your teeth.
Okay, that's the recipe of the week.
Well, no, that is not the recipe of the week, but it's fascinating, absolutely fascinating.
That'll be on our website.
You know what? I want that recipe, please.
All right.
I'm going to try to make that. I'm going to try. Okay. Who knows? Maybe it's wonderful.
Do you cook it in like a can over a fire?
I guess you'd have to make it authentic.
You mean you don't open? You just boil the can. So here's what I'm wondering. Now, if you're a climber, why wouldn't you... If you're going to put powder into a container, you actually could squeeze some juice from an actual orange and put it in a little tiny plastic bag.
But the water weighs. That they're concerned about the weight, so the liquid's
heavier. But you only
needed
just the tiniest little amount of it. Or you could do an orange-flavored olive oil.
Yeah, I think
and drizzle it on instead of
they should just do takeout.
Yeah, no, I think he's got the point, though, because if you're doing it for just one drink, yeah, the little bit of orange concentrate is not a lot of weight. But if you're doing it for – if you're going out like some of these people go out for a week or a month into the woods, right, then it adds up.
And
I know I've talked to people – that have just done the Appalachian Trail, and they're talking about like, oh, that's a couple ounces. I can't take that. Because they carry everything on their backs.
As a kid, we would take – if you had cereal, you'd get rid of the cardboard box. You would repackage stuff in Ziploc bags. They get – I mean, people cut their toothbrushes in half to conserve weight.
And space, right? No, we should – that's a whole show.
Yeah. So you're a mountain climber too?
When I was younger.
No kidding.
Rock climbed, ice climbed, backpacked.
Official observer.
Now just eat.
I like watching people like him pack their packs because it's interesting to watch.
I like getting the holiday cards from these people.
Oh yeah. On the
still
trail.
Alive, you know? So, okay. I don't know if anybody's an oyster fan. I love fresh oysters.
Mm-hmm.
And some people don't, but I'm crazy about them. Alex, did we have an oyster feast at the Oyster Club in Mystic, Connecticut? And it turns out that Travel and Leisure magazine recently named them one of the best oyster bars in America. And Alex and Matt Bennett and I, we devoured a platter of no-ank oysters. They are fantastic. This was the first time that I've had no-ank oysters.
They had a gorgeous cup on them, like the cup where the flesh is was deep, flavor was briny and clean.
Just a beautifully balanced oyster.
Were they large or?
Yeah, they're medium sized. We ate so many oysters.
It was crazy. And we had a wonderful wine to go with them, a Sancerre. French people will have this Sancerre with oysters. It was just perfect. It's
classic.
Like an elegant Sauvignon Blanc for people who don't know what Sancerre is. But then they caught on to us, so out came a whole bunch of tastes from the menu. So we got
including
to try
the 30 oysters? Wow.
Yeah. We started with 30 oysters.
We
started with 30. I sent Matt in and I said, I was trying to park the car. Just get, we were going to do 2 dozen, 3 dozen. Matt's like, how about 30? All right, do 30 and order a bottle of Sancerre, and then that'll get us going. And we started with that before even looking at the menus.
That's like dinner.
Yeah, I'll say.
But, well, here's the other thing. Mystic, it's one of my favorite towns in Connecticut.
Oh, my gosh.
It is so beautiful in Mystic.
And in the fall, what is a more beautiful scene than downtown Mystic?
Yeah, in any season, that place. And the holidays, it's just gorgeous. Yeah. It's just
they have an incredible restaurant scene now with Bravo Bravo, Red 36, Oyster Club, Engine Room, S&P. I mean, you could just drive, park your car. There are many incredible restaurants in that little town.
You could do like a course in each restaurant. Start at the oyster or get a plate of oysters and move on to the next.
So let's name a couple of things that we had at Oyster Club in Mystic that were standouts. I love the roasted beets with this orange whipped ricotta and a roasted peach, black pepper and sage vinaigrette and toasted hazelnuts sprinkled over the top. That was very, very nice. I very much liked my pan roasted fluke.
Oh, that's
and
right.
With potatoes, roasted pepper, sweet onion. It had a parsley oil and garlic aioli. Alex, you liked the pasta you had,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so Matt and I both had pasta. And Chef James is famous for handmade pasta with braised meats like cheeks and tongue and different exotic cuts.
Heaven.
And we typically order a pasta every time we go. As I stumble out the door, I always tell him how his pasta makes me cry. I mean, it's like food so good.
So you had 30 oysters and pasta.
Oh, my God.
He took some home.
Plus more oysters.
I have to say that he does seem to be really great at braising things because my favorite thing on the menu, believe it or not, was this braised goat pozole with hominy, oregano, cumin, heirloom onions, pink beauty radishes, lime, and salsa picante. And the braised goat was so delicious. And for people who say, oh, goat, it scares me. If no one told you what it was, you would be saying, what meat is this? What meat is this? It just has this sort of gentle... there was nothing funky about what goat can sometimes be.
A cross between lamb and beef maybe, right?
Yeah,
I love it.
Even softer than lamb, right?
Even softer than lamb. We eat it all the time because one of my guys that works for me is Jamaican, and he brings it in from home. Mm-hmm. And oh my God, do they do good goat dishes.
I think his braised dishes, the fat comes out of it, so it seems like it's less fatty. Like and it always seems like it's just more the protein strands without all the fat.
So that's a great point, Alex, because remember when Jean George had a restaurant called Vong?
Oh, yeah.
And I went once, and there were, I don't know, I'd say 8 courses. Every single dish was served in some kind of exquisite Vietnamese broth. Mm-hmm. Which is so traditionally Vietnamese, and it takes a lot of beautiful poaching of and you know flakes of this, that, and the other thing to make these multi-layered broths. There's so much complexity in them. So I noticed that the broth in his braise is really it's clean, but it has just exquisite flavor. So very nice. Oyster Club in downtown Mystic. And that's Chef James, and the owner is?
Danny Miser.
A lot of fun in Mystic, no matter what you do, where you go. Just roam around. It is just the best place. All right, we did oyster fans. There are a lot of us love oysters. How about polenta fans? I'm crazy about polenta.
Yeah, you got me with that one. Instant polenta? Fast polenta?
And I don't mean instant polenta that comes in a box.
No, you meant fast polenta.
I mean fast polenta. I love it, especially when you add to polenta a little bit of cheese or nuts or prosciutto, maybe crispy bacon.
Heaven.
And I got to hand it to Fine Cooking Magazine. They have just published a story by Maria Speck, who has invented a way to make real polenta faster in less than 15 minutes.
See, that's crazy because we put a pot on and then...
And then stirring.
And yeah, and when we do it as soon as we get into the restaurant, and then by dinner time, it's kind of ready.
You see what I'm saying? Huh. All that stirring.
All stirring, simmers slowly and reduces and sucks up all the liquid. But it's a process.
This is real polenta. In less than 15 minutes. Well, I'm going to tell you that because we have a break right now, and I'm going to say...
We're going to make polenta during the break.
Oh, this is you see why this is my favorite thing to do. How can you resist great company like this? I'm Faith Middleton. I hope you will make a charitable contribution to feed the hungry. They are more crowded than ever. More mouthwatering conversation and fun here on the Food Schmooze. We'll be right back. Okay, hope that first bite of the Food Schmooze felt like a hot biscuit with butter coming your way. Feel free to tell your food-loving friends worldwide they can enjoy the show and our online site at foodschmooze.org. Here's your second bite.
Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread had a fight. Beans knocked cornbread out of sight. Beans. Cornbread said, now that's all right. Beans. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night. Beans.
We have a free podcast for you, meaning you'll never miss a drop of pleasure. Just sign up for it once at our site, and we will automatically send you our show every week so you can listen on your schedule and hear about the delicious food, wine, events, and cocktails that we feature. Just go to our homepage, foodschmooze, S-C-H like school, foodschmooze.org, and you'll see subscribe. Thanks to our talented team, senior contributor Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, regular contributor Alex Province of Hartford, Eugenia Matruda, Marianne Roy, senior producer Lori Mack, and producer Jonathan McNichol. We thank you first and foremost for listening. All right, I've got Chris hanging on the edge of his chair because of
15-minute polenta.
Maria Speck's article in Fine Cooking Magazine. And it's how to make real polenta faster. In other words, in less than 15 minutes. It usually takes so long to make polenta. She calls it shortcut polenta. And it's on our website right now. Go to foodschmooze.org. You're going to know it right away, because she was thinking about how we make oatmeal faster by soaking the oats overnight. And she said it just a light bulb went on for her.
Yeah, it just went on for me too.
Yeah, she said she tried this out for the first time and it worked 100%. She said, you buy real polenta, which is cornmeal. Puts it in a big bowl or pot, pours in boiling water, covers that pot, and just lets it sit there overnight with the lid on. So it's sitting there for 8 to 12 hours.
Yeah.
And then you make it in your traditional way, stirring, and it is ready to go in less than 15 minutes. Yeah. I think that's genius.
Yeah. I'm going to do that from now on.
You're
going
to start it the next
before? Yeah, why not?
Just because you're leaving the restaurant? Yeah, I mean, why not?
Just boom, done it. You come in the morning and you can make it in 10 seconds, and right, in my world.
Yeah. Chef, instead of using hot water, what about using the hot stock that you're going to cook the polenta in later so that way you're not...
I mean, 50-50. Some people, I mean, traditionally it's made with water. But if you want to make it with stock, that adds just a little more flavor, especially if you're going to serve it with chicken.
Well, somebody once did it in a crock pot, I think, too.
I think so.
I've done that, too. So, I've done it, but it never makes enough.
Oh.
So here's
because the crock
pots
aren't big enough yet.
Here's what she's doing. In a two-quart, I'm quoting now Fine Cooking Magazine, in a two-quart saucepan, she's bringing the broth to a boil. I'm talking here about chicken broth, okay? So she's bringing the chicken broth to a boil. She's whisking the broth and a little salt into the polenta that loosens it and breaks up any clumps, brings that to a boil on medium-high heat, couple whisk turns. That takes about 5 minutes. Then you turn the heat down. It's simmering. You just keep whisking constantly pretty much, and it becomes thick and becomes porridge-like. That takes about 2 minutes. She turns the heat down, covers, and stirs. And the whole thing is done in less than 15 minutes.
And those are the steps after you've soaked it overnight.
The next day.
Right, yes.
That's great.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So I am just going to save this forever. And by the way, I encourage you to see this particular issue or to go online for their thing, because I love the add-ins on polenta. They've got yogurt, lemon, and dill, saffron, and pistachio. Of course, I love cheese and polenta.
And I can see the photos from here. What amazing photography.
Yeah, it's really good. Really, really good. I'm just so impressed. And they also explain to you the difference between grits and cornmeal and polenta. It's just different grinds.
Yeah, size, right?
Yeah.
The grits are the largest, and then it goes down from there.
Right, Chris. I knew you would know that. Okay.
I use a guy down the street from me that actually grinds his own grits, polenta, cornmeal, corn flour.
So all I could think about, remember the true-false questions that Faith was asking us and all the hard
and
questions?
Why
didn't we get a polenta question? What's the difference between grit and polenta?
No, because she always gives us questions she knows we don't know the answer to.
Well, that's not hard.
Yeah, it's not hard.
You're getting a bad rap here,
the
Faith.
The four of us here, no. No, it's not a bad rap. That's just really easy.
Okay, I don't know.
I just got that.
Somebody got up on the wrong side of the bed this morning. Okay, Alex and company, let's brainstorm about acorn squash. I cannot wait to start making it. I'm stopping by lots of different farms recently, and it's just piles and piles, and I'm so excited, okay? It's delicious. It's good for us. All right, Alex, and his recipe is on our website right now. Alex, and then I'm going to ask anybody else if you have a special trick. But Alex, give us your recipe.
So like you, Matt kills me because I walk through the grocery store, and I come home with all these squashes and acorn squashes and pumpkins. And I was like, what are we going to do with these?
It's decoration.
Well, and in theory, I'm going to eat them. But here's a recipe that you can actually use this stuff. So I took an acorn squash. I cut it in half, took the seeds out, put it aside. Took a couple tablespoons of butter, some olive oil in a saute pan. I sauteed like a half an onion, a couple stalks of celery, some crisp apples. So I use Honeycrisp apples.
I like that.
Chopped in little pieces, a little salt, pepper. Did some cremini mushrooms, playing off this fall sort of thing. So I sauteed it in this fat. And then at the end, added a little crushed garlic, some flat leaf parsley. And then once it was all sort of transparent, I put it in a big bowl off to the side. In the same saute pan, I took Italian sweet sausage that I sort of cut the casing and then used a fork to squish it in the pan. I crisped it. I didn't touch it until I developed that good brown bits. Scraped it around, put that into my bowl, and then in that same saute pan, I deglazed it with a little chicken stock.
You just put a splash of chicken stock in?
Used a wooden spoon, and then I dumped that into my bowl, and that's about a cup and a half of stock when it was all said and done. So I mixed it with a big spoon, then I took it and put the stuffing mixture into the acorn squash, just piled it up. use my hand to sort of get as much. I made too much stuffing, too few acorn squashes. So I fit as much as I could, put it on a pan, and I baked it in the oven at 350 until the squash was cooked, the skin was blistering. And then I found the stuffing gets a little, starts browning, so I put tin foil on top, or aluminum foil on top, just to keep it
and
from
did
browning.
You use a little water in the bottom of the pan for
that's
the acorn
squash? That's a good idea.
Squash?
I didn't think of that.
Okay.
But that's a great idea to sort of add some steam and prevent it from burning.
And it cooks a little faster, doesn't it?
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Oh, that sounds delicious.
That sounds really good.
Matt loved it, so...
How long?
Normally doesn't eat squash.
That would be a main course then.
Yeah, that's what.
That's dinner.
Yeah, we had some, speaking of macaroni and cheese, we had some really good macaroni and cheese from a restaurant that we didn't even get to. So I heated, since the oven
on the
was
side.
Going.
Why are they not 300 pounds?
I worked with a trainer yesterday.
Oh,
see, this is the thing. He's working with a trainer so he can eat the squash
and
the macaroni and
sort
cheese.
Sort of maintain net neutral.
Net neutral.
It's like carb night.
Yeah, I
got to
work out for 7.5 hours today, but boy, I'm eating that mac and cheese.
And then you just take a big spoon, scoop out all the, you know, the acorn, leave the skin, put it on a
mix
plate.
Mix it with the pasta?
Pasta would have been great.
Oh, God.
So when it comes out of the oven, how do you serve it? Do you take the acorn squash along with the stuffing and put it into a bowl and mix it up all together?
No, sort of. I think Matt just sort of scooped it, and Matt's great at plating food. I was, by this time, upstairs in bed already, started watching television, so it came on a beautiful plate.
Wow. How long did it take in the oven?
Well, I was like sort of distressed. It depends. I did like an hour and a half, yeah. But you could probably – I wanted to make sure it was nice and soft.
No, it does
take
a long time. I mean, that's the one thing about the squash. They do. You have to get them in the oven quick.
You don't want them al dente.
No, you want it creamy.
How long would it take if we have a little water in the pan?
That would speed it up a little bit.
I remember it taking me about half an hour. Does that sound right?
Or yeah. You're thinking but you want it, like, if you like it like he does, and I do too, where it's soft and just melted, right? And I think that's the difference between some people who are like, it never comes out the same as when I have it at the restaurant. We cook it for a very long time because then it gets that kind of mashed potato-y kind of
exactly
feel.
Exactly right.
And soft. It gets actually
comfort food.
Yeah, and it's kind of silky too, the squash, right?
I have the sweetest lady at Whole Foods that watches my ingredients go by, and she sort of pieced together what I was doing.
And she also says to herself, why isn't he 300 pounds? Yeah.
So she's Peruvian and suggested I, instead of using the stuffing, I use rice, the stuffing mix that went in with the sautéed apples and onions and celery. She would use rice, and then this way you would end up with a gluten-free dinner rather than, you know, stuffing that has bread, presumably with wheat.
So did you put bread in your stuffing?
I used the stuffing, the bread stuffing, for carbohydrates.
Because you didn't have enough with the mac and cheese and the sausage and the squash.
I didn't want rice. I wanted stuffing.
Wow.
So this recipe is on our website right now.
I'm thinking Thanksgiving.
I was just going to say the same thing.
Is it too early?
This is pre-Thanksgiving.
No, but
this is just getting you in the mood.
But that'd be a great Thanksgiving dish.
But would you do this with this stuffing in it, would you do it instead of the turkey stuffing?
I would do it instead of the turkey stuffing. And I just saw, that's why it popped into my head. I just saw this recipe from Miller's Turkey Farm, where it actually had rice and wild rice instead of bread. And it said because people are looking for gluten substitutes. So instead of putting the breadcrumbs in your stuffing, use rice or wild rice or a combination of the thing. And it works just like the breadcrumbs would or the little cube breads would.
Well, there are also, you know, there are a million gluten-free breads, Udi's, UDI, Udi's in particular, that are you know, terrific to use in stuffing.
So make your own stuffing. I use the plastic bag, you know, the
stuffing
pre-made stuffing mix.
Yeah.
Okay,
but you probably could have just as easily and for cheaper made your own stuffing.
Well, but that's an extra step. I'm with you on buying the stuff.
Did you even have to add bread at all? Or rice
Well, I
at
was
all.
Thinking the same thing because that sounded perfectly fine.
Well, you need something to suck up the juice.
And hold it together as a stuffing. Otherwise, it just sort of breaks apart.
We could try
because Matt is a presentation guy, and he's got
and he
a scoop and beauty plate, and right?
Because I wouldn't have a problem if it was just falling all over the place, all over the squash.
You were
really
already
good.
Scooping it out into the bowl.
I was having a good time with it.
Me too. I would be just happy. Okay, well, foodschmooze.org, you'll find this recipe. And we have an early autumn cocktail coming up for you also, just to get you ready. Chris, what would you do with acorn squash?
All right,
squash?
So I've been doing this with squash, and we did this on Sunday. And it's something I picked up, and I don't even know why I haven't been doing it all along, because I have one of these devices, and it's a pressure cooker. And just like when I found this when I was teaching somewhere, dusty in the corner, when I got back home, I found my pressure cooker dusty in the corner, and I had to actually wash it because I hadn't used it in years. And it's the best thing, because I take the squash, cut it in half, scoop it out, and then I just take about...
Scoop out the seeds.
Scoop out the seeds, and then I take about a half inch of water, put it in the bottom of the pressure cooker. I put the squash cut side down at the bottom of the pan, and then I just snap on the lid, you know, whatever the instructions for your particular pressure cooker is, get it up to full pressure, and we did spaghetti squash in 6 minutes.
Now that's pretty good next to an hour and a half.
Yeah,
there,
but now,
isn't it, Alex?
But now you're waiting for the polenta, you know, all these speedy foods.
But 6 minutes. And again, you could do this with acorn squash too. And then you just take
six
it out.
6 minutes?
Yeah, and then so now it's just cooked, so you don't have that stuffing thing. But now you can take that squash and scoop it. It comes right out of the – it's almost like the skin becomes a shell.
Put some butter, cinnamon.
Oh, my gosh.
Wait a minute. Why couldn't – while that's cooking, if you could do it fast enough, couldn't you just make up – this
perfect
filling mix in a saute pan that Alex describes on our website, his recipe, and just make that up. And when you pull your acorn squash out of there after 6 minutes, just scoop, put your cooked stuffing right into the center of it.
But then he wouldn't have been, this was all a plan. He would have been laying in bed waiting for the tray. we got your
that
number.
That is a great idea. Now, I forgot to ask you, if you're cooking it in the oven, the squash, not in the, I don't know why you wouldn't do it in a pressure cooker after hearing this, but if you do it in the oven because you like that kind of braisy quality to it, is it cut side down in the water?
If you're just going to do it plain, I do it cut side down. And that's why when you were saying you did it and it was a little faster than that, and that's why it goes faster. You put a little water in the pan. It's cut side down. The flesh is in contact with the pan, and it does, I think, half hour, 45 minutes, and an acorn squash is done.
All right, very quickly, I want to tell you about a wine discovery. This is, and I'll give you the name of the distributor so that they can look it up in the wine book at your wine store, as we usually do, $15 and under for our wines. And this is a very, very pale rosé from Bonnie Dune Vineyards in California. And it is the 2013 Vin Gris de Cigar. So VinGrisDeCigare. And it is absolutely delicious. I really like this wine. I walked into a small wine store on the green in Guilford, Connecticut, Frank's. And the man there said to me, oh, I had several in my hand. And I said, you know, what about this one? And he said, oh, that one I've had. That is delicious. And, you know, I had one that was $2 cheaper. And I thought, well, let me go for delicious. Let me see what this is like. And so thank you to Frank's, because that was a great suggestion. Here's what to say at your wine store. And this will range in price, depending on the store, between probably $12 and $15. So Michael Skernick Wines. You want to say, if they don't have it on the shelf, Michael Skernick Wines, Skurnik. This is on our website. So it's a 2013 Vin Gris de Cigar. It's made by Bonnie Dune Vineyards in California.
And, you know, he might
delicious
just,
drinking all year long, by the way.
He might just be the one who started that, right? That might be one of the first rosés made in California, right? In that style.
Wouldn't be surprised, right?
Bone dry. Quite elegant, but just a whisper. You can taste the grape skin in there somewhere. Oh,
Rhone
it's just
varietals.
Wonderful.
Rhone varietals. And also making rosés out of it. He might be one of the first California people, because that goes back to the early 80s?
I don't remember.
Yeah, a long time ago.
Yeah, well, there's another one of a guy out in California who was doing nothing but rosé, specializing in them. Yeah. What happens is that these places that specialize in rosés can be hard for them. It was hard for them to make it, but as more and more of us have discovered rosés, You know, they have their own section now in the wine stores. You know, people have really started to get into rosés. We walk down outdoor cafes, and no matter where you are, on the table out in front of the restaurant, everybody's drinking rosé now.
Great food wine, right?
At first, it was, I remember doing wine tastings, I felt like I was insulting people by asking them to try a rosé, and they would tell me, I don't drink pink wine. I'm like, this isn't what you're thinking. I mean, these wines, if you were blindfolded, you would think was a white wine. It's so crisp, no sugar, very, very fun to drink. And for us wine drinkers, it's just another color of wine to drink.
All right, so. We want to give you on the other side of the break we have coming up. I asked Alex to come up with an early autumn cocktail where there's still some warmth in the air, but as Alex says, maybe you've got a sweater over your shoulders. You know, we're going to get to that in just a second, and it really sounds delicious. So, and of course, that's on our website, as everything is. Coming up, we have the Farmstead Egg Guide and Cookbook, and we're going to tell you how to make a quick and easy carbonara. Chris just made this for us, and it was so delicious.
Oh,
and we had it three different ways, with gluten, without gluten, and with a vegetable to mimic pasta. So we'll tell you how we did that. Plus, I've got a tip for you on the best gluten-free flour for bakers. This is a tip from a friend of mine who is a baker, and this is how she feels about it. So I had her brownies, and they were sensational in terms of texture and taste. So we'll get to that in just a second. Please support your local food growers and food makers. Find the food, wine, recipes, cocktails that we feature right now online at foodschmooze.org. More delicious conversation after this quick break. Please stay with us. We have one more mouthwatering bite of the Food Schmooze coming up. Here's something great to know about. Sign up for the app called NPR One. Just download it from the iPhone App Store or your Android device. And once you do, you can set WNPR as your local station. Couldn't be easier. Download the free app NPR One and start listening. Let's party on. More Food Schmooze. I'm Faith Middleton with the gang. This is the Food Schmooze Party coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR, FaithWNPR. And to join the conversation with us on Facebook, search The Faith Middleton Show. As a matter of fact, I invite you to use either of those to tweet us or to use Facebook. Because we're interested in promoting food trucks doing a great job. If you have a truck or know of a favorite, tweet us at the addresses we just gave you and just let us know where you are, and we're going to pass on word of a good thing. Just love our food trucks out there and excited every time there's a new one that people are excited about. All right, we're going to get to Alex Provence's early autumn cocktail. I said, Alex, come up with something, and sure enough, he has. How do you make it, Alex?
All right, so this is my like Sunday night in the fall sipping cocktail. I took a shot of bourbon, a shot of aged rum, some sort of rum that has like a little color to it.
Kind of a caramel brown.
Exactly right. And it doesn't have to be like the black kind, but just a little barrel-y. I took two shots of apple cider that you get at the grocery store, a squeeze of fresh lime juice, maybe a drizzle of honey. You can either use a Boston shaker or put it right in the glass, like a rocks glass with some ice cubes, give it a stir, and garnish it with a lime or a cinnamon stick. Yeah. Like a dark and stormy, but for fall.
I like it. I like the cinnamon stick.
And do you advise if it's, you know, a little too sweet for your particular taste, or just add a little bit more lemon lime juice?
I start off less sweet. So start off with like a drizzle of honey, because you can't – it's not as easy to remove the sugar. And I don't like cocktails super sweet. So a little drizzle. If you need more, it's right in your glass. Just put a little bit more.
Yeah, but if you do like honey, then put in more honey.
So and balance it with the acid, more lime.
Yeah, so you can fool with it.
Mixology.
That's a great one. I love that, Alex. Okay, as promised, we're always searching about the best flour for gluten-free eaters and bakers. Well, my friend Miriam, who is the baker at the Country Store on Village Lane in Orient, New York, that's the North Fork of Long Island, she loves to work with this cake flour that she has found. It's called Deyas. D-E-Y-A apostrophe S. And she recently made the best gluten-free chocolate walnut brownies. They were delicious. The texture was beautiful. They did not have that kind of metallic-y taste that certain mixes of gluten-free flours can have. People are just getting better and better at this. And for me, the test is you serve it to people and no one knows. I, for instance, I would have said, but this is just a delicious brownie. So it's at our website right now to get that brand of flour. And that's foodschmooze.org, as you know. Here we go. As you know, we are eating now. We're talking about what's out there in the markets. If you go to farmers markets, as I do, you see what is fresh now. So fennel is out there. Of course, the apples are just starting to come out there. There's arugula there now, chanterelle mushrooms, green beans, seckel pears are out there, and lots and lots more. Of course, we've got Chinese broccoli and horseradish and kohlrabi and mustard greens and okra and pumpkins and rutabagas and scallions and shallots, all kinds of squashes, tomatillos. Turnips, and so on and on we'll go. We'll tell you on the Food Schmooze every time what is out there. Now, here we go. This book is really interesting because it's called The Farmstead Egg Guide and Cookbook, and I learned so much about real eggs. I'm talking about where the farmers care about what the chickens are eating. And so when that happens, depending on what they eat and how much freedom they have, they are laying eggs that are so delicious, so beautiful looking. You can see why they're better for you. Because, Chris, as you were saying, the color is saffron. The yolk is
stand up tall.
Standing up tall. Honestly, you just, it's, there's just,
no
comparison. It's fantastic. Yeah. I mean, not that there aren't some good egg companies out there. I mean, the other day I had Farmer's Cow.
They do a great job.
Eggs. And they're right here in Connecticut, and they were delicious. So, I mean, there are people who are doing lots and lots of eggs, you know, smaller companies doing them, and they do a
and
very
people
good
too,
job.
Right? The your neighbors are a great resource if they have chickens.
Speaking of neighbors.
I mean, we have 12 chickens on the farm I live on, and we
wish I had that
with 12 chickens, we produce more eggs than we can eat, and the neighbor, everybody in our neighborhood profits.
But it's the coolest thing to see neighbors walking down the street with their cardboard cartons going to the people who have eggs and coming back with a dozen eggs.
Yeah.
Ultimate sharing.
Here is Terry Golson, who is author of the Farmstead Egg Guide and Cookbook. Welcome to the Food Schmooze, Terry.
I'm so pleased to be here.
So how did I do on the egg description? What is it that to make the very best tasting eggs and looking eggs, what are these chickens eating?
It depends on the backyard, and that's sort of what makes them so special. In my backyard, right now, my chickens are getting my butternut squash, which I'm afraid have been gnawed on, so it's better for the chickens than for me. They're eating the last of my tomatoes. They scratch around and get bugs. They get their laying hen pellets from the store, all sorts of things. Chickens are omnivores.
So they have a wide-ranging palate, and some people will put out food scraps. Do you ever do that?
Absolutely. The The problem with food scraps is sometimes, just like with people, the food scraps aren't as healthy as they could be for the chickens. If they eat too many foods that have a lot of calories and no value, they'll get fat and they won't be able to lay good eggs. It's the same with chickens as it is with people. So I do give them food scraps, but the food scraps my chickens get tend to be the scrapings from my cooking.
So where Chris lives, there are chickens, because he's living on a farm. They let the chickens out for a certain number of hours in a day, and they peck away, right, Chris?
Oh, my gosh. You look at them. They're like an army pecking away at the grass, and then they go into my front walk where there's, like, wood chips, and they, you know, scourge around in there for food. And, yeah, they're just the happiest chickens. And then you had the eggs today. You can taste how happy the chickens were.
Yeah, we had them on your carbonara. We're going to get to that in a second. Let's go to scrambled eggs, because I thought we all cook scrambled eggs. And I realize when I see someone like Jacques Pepin doing scrambled eggs, just how badly I'm making them. They're fine for me, but I mean, they're Jacques Pepin's scrambled eggs are just exquisite. So you have what you call the master recipe for scrambled eggs. How do you do it?
I do. The secret to cooking most egg recipes is a low heat. And the mistake that people do is they want those eggs quick in the morning. They're hungry. They get going. They heat the frying pan up. The hotter the frying pan, the more the eggs give off their liquid instead of holding them into the egg. So that's when you get those watery scrambled eggs.
So you heat a 10-inch skillet over very low heat and melt a little bit of butter in there.
And just take your time and fluff them up. And, of course, starting with good eggs really, really helps. Eggs do vary in flavor, and they vary in freshness. And the thing about having fresh eggs is they taste better, and you can really taste it.
So you whisk the eggs, and then you pour them into this pan on low heat with a little bit of butter in it. And using this rubber spatula, you're stirring frequently, but I'm always doing the reverse. You push the eggs from the center to the sides of the pan, so the raw egg moves in contact with the hot skillet. I do the reverse, but I don't know if it matters. But as soon as that egg, and you have to be patient, firms up all the way, you're good to go, and they're tender and fluffy and beautiful. I noticed that you don't put any milk or cream in your eggs as I do.
You know, you can. I kept the master recipe very, very simple because personally I believe that scrambled eggs should be as basic and in the morning as possible. I send a son off to high school at 6:15 in the morning. He has scrambled eggs every morning, and I'm not really awake to do anything else. I have it down to a minimal recipe as possible and still getting the best out of it.
All right. Well, Chris, we asked Chris to make your spaghetti a la carbonara recipe, and this was so delicious, and we did it three ways. We did it with a regular pasta, which has gluten in it. We did it with a gluten-free pasta, and we did it with spaghetti squash, just to see what that would be like. Chris, yeah.
Squash was amazing, wasn't
it?
That was Chris's wonderful idea. Yeah. So
I'm going to have to try that.
Yeah, very cool. Okay, so Chris, tell us how easy this was to
make. Oh my gosh, I didn't look at the recipe until about 10 o'clock last night. And I was like, oh, I got to get going on this. And then I'm like, no, I don't. Because really, you cook the pasta. So it starts off with a pound of spaghetti. And while your pasta's cooking, you whisk three eggs together with a quarter cup of Vermonter cheese and a half a cup of Parmesan cheese. And then you have a little extra parm for the top. Then you take that and set it aside, and your pasta is still cooking. You take 8 ounces of pancetta, cut it into a half-inch dice, and 2 cloves of garlic that you just smash, and you put that in a pan, and you crisp the pancetta.
With some olive oil,
Yeah, and then you crisp the pancetta till it gets crispy and set that aside.
And the garlic, you get rid of that it'll turn brown if you don't, right?
Yeah, and you don't want the big chunk of garlic because you just smash it, right? You don't chop it up.
Just the flavor of the oil.
Yeah, just the flavor of the oil. And it does get into the pancetta, too, because as we were finishing up last night, we were
so
picking.
Good.
So the 8 ounces of pancetta probably for us was only about 6 ounces because 2 ounces went to the staff last
night.
Don't
think we didn't notice.
Yeah, I know. And then it's really just comes together. When you drain, and this is the funny part, when I looked at it, I was like, oh, yeah, that's so simple. You drain the pasta, and the pasta now is hot enough to cook the eggs. So the eggs are in a big bowl. You take your hot pasta that is drained, and you basically just dump it onto the egg and cheese mixture and mix it up. And the pasta
just
hot
toss,
enough.
Toss, toss, toss,
toss, toss, toss. That's that's it. And then you just add your pancetta to it. Then you add a little pinch of salt, some fresh basil, and black pepper.
So that pancetta was sitting in that a little bit of olive oil, which has now been flavored with just a touch of garlic, and that just gets tossed in with a little touch of salt. You can garnish with basil if you want, a little sprinkling of pepper if you want to add additional Parmesan cheese. It was delicious.
And for all three, we did the exact same thing with the spaghetti squash. I just heated that up, back up in a saute pan and got it a little brown and did the same thing. I did one little egg and with a little cheese and then dumped the spaghetti squash in the bowl.
Loved it with spaghetti squash.
Yeah, it was good.
It was spaghetti squash carbonara. Yeah. So if you've never done spaghetti squash, Chris, because I love it. Go ahead.
Cut it in half, scoop out the seeds, and then on a baking sheet, just like you were doing the acorn squash before, upside down on the baking sheet with a little bit of water in the pan in the oven about, you know, 30 minutes, 40 minutes. You take it out, let it cool a little bit, grab the bottom of, you know, the shells part or the outside part, and then you just scrape it with a fork. And the spaghetti strands come out of this shell and –
And it does not have the same texture as a spaghetti,
you
know, but it's delicious.
Listen, for gluten-free
because
people,
really we're in it for the topping.
Come on. On Sunday, we made butter noodles with Parmesan cheese with spaghetti squash, and it was a hit.
But in fairness, though, to Faith's point, I was hoping that the spaghetti, when I first came in and heard spaghetti squash, I was like, oh, it really is like pasta. And you're like, no, that is pasta. Spaghetti squash is that.
No. All right. It's the word.
Nice job on that recipe, Terry. Terry Golson, who's author of, in paperback, The Farmstead Egg Guide and Cookbook. Lots of great tips about having chickens, too, in the beginning of this book. I want to jump to your recipe for Spanish garlic soup because it has eggs in it. This is wonderful. Alex, you know about this. Alex is Spanish. Okay, go ahead.
It's a really flavorful broth that's cooked with saffron and garlic, and you simmer it up with some really good sturdy bread, and then at the last minute, like onion soup where you put it in the oven. But instead, this, you poach an egg in this really flavorful broth at the last minute.
So we're talking about a little bit of olive oil, lots of garlic, sweet paprika, ground cumin, ground saffron, chicken broth, a little salt and pepper, the eggs, and some chopped fresh cilantro or parsley, depending on your taste. That all comes together so easily, and then you drop the eggs into this soup mixture, and they poach to make a Spanish garlic soup. Did you grow up with that, Alex?
So classic in the winter, this time of year, in the north of Spain and the south of Spain. My mom always talks about garlic soup.
And let's jump to also your smoked trout omelet. I love smoked trout.
I do too. I mean, one of the things when I come up with recipes is I think about the ingredients that I love the most, and then I think about how do I put them together as simply as possible to bring out the best of those good ingredients, and that's what I tried to do here.
So some eggs, a little bit of milk, some unsalted butter, shredded smoked trout, and minced chives. The eggs are going into a skillet.
Like the scrambled egg recipe, you want to do this on a low heat because you want those eggs to set without giving off any extra liquid. You want that liquid to stay in the eggs, and that's what gives omelets that lovely soft, rich texture.
And then you add the shredded trout as it starts to firm up. The eggs start to firm up. I just don't want to let you go without talking about these cheese custards.
I love custards.
Oh, ramekins that are, you know, little ceramic dishes that are cooking in a baking dish with a little bit of water in there. So that we, in a fancy way, we'd call this a bain-marie, right?
That's right.
Water bath. This is just a gorgeous, gorgeous little savory custard that you make.
Yum.
And it shimmers and shakes.
You don't even have to do the sort of custard where you have to simmer the egg yolks first. This is so basic and simple. You just put the ingredients together, pour it into the buttered custard cups, put it in the oven, and they come out luscious.
And so those ingredients are the eggs, almost 2 cups of half and half, some salt, a few ounces of the cheese of your choice that is grated, and then a couple tablespoons of grated Parmesan cheese. And
this is a great recipe to use up those little bits of extravagant cheese you might have in the refrigerator.
Oh, good idea.
Great
so
with
the
glass
oven
of wine.
Is on. You put this in this little ceramic things and put the ceramic things in a baking dish. There's a little bit of water in the bottom of the dish. So essentially you're poaching these eggs in this water bath, and that's what makes them so shimmery and shaky as a true custard. And
that's
then
right.
Half and half is in there with the cheeses, and it just bakes in the oven for about a half an hour until the custards are firmly set. They're nice and firm. Oh, boy. You can do this with goat cheese and asparagus, as you do in the book.
He just said glass of wine. I'm thinking poached salmon, glass of wine, and that custard.
For a light dinner, glass of wine, a little salad, and a custard.
You can put a little bit of that smoked trout in there.
Oh, yeah. Or just on top.
I wish we'd had time. See, I wanted to get into your chocolate walnut meringue cookies because...
I want to
salivate. Come on, don't stop.
All right, I will.
Listen to those are so beautiful. They crackle on the top. Yeah, they're the prettiest things.
And don't you agree, Terry, this is great for the gluten-free people who have gluten-free chocolate because it's bittersweet or semi-sweet chocolate, egg whites, cream of tartar, granulated sugar, and chopped walnuts.
That's it.
There's no flour in this, and so if you're a paleo type, this is also great for you, or if you're just someone who loves cookies as I do, this is great for you too. So many, many great recipes in here. I like your work a lot. Thank you so much, Terry, for being on the Food Schmooze Party.
Oh, I enjoyed myself. Thanks.
Okay. In paperback, The Farmstead Egg Guide and Cookbook. The Food Schmooze on WNPR airs Thursdays at 3, Saturdays at noon. Weekdays, listen for my 60-second food schmoozes. We're online right now with all the recipes we talked about and more at foodschmooze.org. Here's to pleasure, my friends. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.
Everybody eats when they come to my.
This is the place to enjoy the richness of life. Sharing our local and national discoveries with you makes me want to get up in the morning. The gang and I hope you'll come back soon and often.